15 seconds.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery.
Oh.
Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The Executive Director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine. Yes, it is.
Thank you. But yes. People, even though it's wet and rainy, they're still happy and cheering. That's good. That's good. Thank you. Thank you.
They're just glad to get out of the rain.
Yeah.
It's been raining here, and they're just happy to be out of the rain and underneath the giant tent out in the back here, listening to us live on the speakers and however that works.
And having some wine.
Yes.
Because it's all about wine.
It's all about segue.
You see that? That was
That was very good. That was very good. It's all about New Mexican wine.
New Mexican wine. Yes.
I thought I heard a discussion about this before. Where do you actually call them New Mexicans?
I don't know. We need to ask our guest tonight.
We'll have to. I don't want to insult anybody. I mean, do you call yourself New Mexicans?
Is it New Mexicans or you know?
Yeah.
New Mexicoans. I don't know. That's a good question.
Strange. Yeah. And you have a wine fest coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday. Yes.
Yeah.
And
so that's
going to
be cool.
Might get rained out. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's
like a 40% chance of 50% chance of rain, but the rains are coming in the afternoon late, and the festival is usually over 4, so people can still come out. Yeah.
Oh, well, you can come out anyway and drink inside.
That's right. So
you
absolutely.
Yeah. I'd love to shop the vendors, but you know, if that part gets rained out, there's always inside, and you have a very nice gift shop and wine area, and just a perfect place to be anyway, regardless of the weather.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Hurricanes notwithstanding, but I'm just saying. have you all ever been open during the hurricanes? Or
yes, as a matter of fact. We had a festival during one of our hurricanes about 8 years ago. We had very bad weather and a festival go through. Our hurricane went through, and we had a festival scheduled that day, and no vendors showed up, no music, and we were so busy. Mark and I worked there at the time, and we were so busy. It was one of the best festivals we ever had without having a festival. People wanted things to do, and everything else was closed because of the bad weather, and so we had all these people out at the winery, and it was just amazing.
That's funny. I was going to ask. I was like, what have you ever been up? You know, it's I know you're closed to major holidays, but, you know, hurricane sometimes spells holidays for some people, but nope, not Florida State's winery.
it was great, though. It's one of the better festivals we ever had without having a festival. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, we have a couple of guests that are going to be on later in just a few minutes. I guess we'll have our first one, and we'll have the other one later on in the show. So tonight, New Mexico, where I don't think they've ever had a hurricane or
I don't
any
believe
kind
so.
Of a, probably not. Or maybe
they've
the remnants
flooding.
Of it. But
they've had flooding, though.
Yes, they have. Yeah.
In fact, the Rio Grande flooded back in 1936, and it wiped out all the vineyards along the Rio Grande River, and which virtually stopped winemaking in New Mexico until the early 70s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. That wasn't on your newsletter. The last newsletter. I read some interesting wine facts on your newsletter this last time. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. You know, it's like one of those. You know, if you're out there listening, subscribe to the Florida State's Winery newsletter. It comes out like every 2 weeks or so, and so they're not going to flood your inbox with all kinds of stuff. And it's really cool. They have a wine recipe, wine related recipe. I think this time was potato salad.
Yeah, it's a good potato salad, too. Yeah, very good potato salad.
Yeah, I'm going to try that. I love potato salad. And then the wine facts, I was reading through these, and I was like, oh, my God, that's really interesting. I never realized that. So maybe if I'll stop talking and get our guest on here in a little bit, maybe we can cover that sometime.
Yeah, maybe at the end of the program, you might really go through them. And, you know.
Yeah, in our extended show.
yes, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Most people listen to it on that anyway, so, hey.
Well, that's true. We thank you for
New Mexico. Let me, before you get a hold of our guests, I always like to, when we get a new state, always like to do the old where it is, what it is, how is it doing, and all that stuff. So let me fill you in on New Mexico here. To begin with, New Mexico is located in the southwest part of the country, just west of Texas. Oklahoma touches it, the little finger of Oklahoma that goes out there touches New Mexico at the upper eastern corner. Then Colorado at the north and Arizona to the west, but New Mexico is part of the four-state area that meets at the one spot where you can stand on all four states with one foot at once. So it actually touches Utah right at that very corner, northwestern corner of the state. So it's surrounded by five states. It is dry, very dry down that part of the country. A lot of higher elevation, the plateaus and all that. They only have 33 counties in New Mexico. One of the things that fascinated me, though, most of the counties are really pretty large. I mean, the state the size of New Mexico, you expect to have lots of counties, but you don't. Really, most of them are rather large counties, except for one. There's one little county in the north central part of the state that's Los Alamos County, where they have the Los Alamos range and stuff like that. Very small county that just stuck right up there in the middle of the northeast or north central part of the state. Major highways running through is I-25, which runs north south through Santa Fe, which is the state capital, down through Albuquerque and south to Las Cruces, and then on into the tip of Texas, western tip of Texas. I-10, it comes out of Arizona in the southern part of the state, catches I-25 and also turns and goes and joins it there. To the middle of the state, north middle of the state, I-40 catches just about, south of Santa Fe, goes through Albuquerque and cuts across the state there. Old Route 66 ran through New Mexico. We've all heard of Route 66 and no longer in existence, but that ran through New Mexico. That was I had an opportunity to travel that many years ago, and it was all the roadside attractions and everything. New Mexico had a lot of the old Indian attractions and stuff there. Elevation. It's high. It's the whole state. The lowest point in the state is Red Bluff Reservoir, and that's way up at 2,842 feet elevation. And the highest point is Wheeler Peak at 13,161 feet. The elevation is pretty high there. We have had New Mexico in the news recently because of the wildfires. There's been quite a few wildfires there threatening actually burned quite a bit of the forest, and they've threatened Los Alamos and the areas around there quite a bit. But it's I think they've got them all under the control now and everything. The rivers, the big one, Rio Grande River, runs down and through, starts up in about the center of the northern part of the state, runs toward the western part a little bit, western center, and on out into Texas, and forms a border. New Mexico is on the Continental Divide, so everything that is actually, the Continental Divide runs toward basically the western part of the state, so everything on the west of the Continental Divide runs out into the Pacific Ocean and actually the Gulf of California, which is down by Baja. And everything else on the eastern part runs into the Gulf of Mexico, except for one little area around Albuquerque, and it's a little low area there that doesn't run anywhere. It just pretty much stays right there within itself, a basin area in itself. The weather is usually pretty dry. In fact, I didn't look up what the temperature was right now. I usually check on that, but I don't know what the temperature is in those areas down there. But the weather's usually pretty dry. The cities throughout New Mexico, the big ones that we're so used to, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Gallup, New Mexico, most of the ones around there, a lot of them are named after the Spanish settlers and Indian names, because basically it was Spanish settlers and the Mexicans that settled it. So this is the base of the names and stuff in that state. We are going to talk to some wineries from New Mexico. First one we're going to talk to is going to be Jerry from Black Mesa Winery. And Black Mesa, there you go. Jerry's being introduced. I hear that.
Yes, he is.
Black Mesa Winery. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to bring Jerry. You with us there?
I am.
Oh, hold on. There you go.
Yeah, there he is. He's on microphone. I could have done that. I can control that. I don't know why I didn't.
I didn't know you were looking at it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was. I asked if he was on. He was in the background. So now you're with us, Jerry.
Okay. Okay, sounds good.
You are from Black Mesa Winery. Tell us about Black Mesa Winery.
It's hard to tell where to start, but Black Mesa is located halfway between Taos and Santa Fe, and we're along the Rio Grande River. So we've got a kind of an interesting microclimate here. In this little valley, it's a Velarde Valley, and I'm growing Pinot Grigio. There's a little Pinot Noir growing in the valley here, Syrah, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Riesling, Chardonnay, and recently got a pretty good crop of Montepulciano.
Wow.
So it's a little warm spot. We're in between two mesas, Black Mesa on one side and then another mesa on the east side, and they're both formed by a lot of volcanic activity, so we have a lot of black rock that tends to keep us a few degrees warmer, especially in the evenings in the winter up here, because we'll get down to 0 degrees, but not so cold that it kills the vines and stuff, and then gives us a few more degree days, growing days in the fall as we ripen our grapes.
You hit lightly on three or four of the questions that I had there already. You mentioned the weather. What is your highs and your lows? Highs in the summer and lows in the winter, and just overall weather. The highs at the lows at night in the summer. All this. Fill us in on the weather for that area there.
Well, right around here, the summer, we will occasionally get over 100 degrees, maybe 2 or 3 days during the year is all. And then generally at night, it cools down to 55 to 60 degrees, though last night it didn't get below 70. We're right in the middle of a weather change stuff here, and that's kind of warm for us at night. It does drop down pretty well. We're at 5,800 feet, so 70 degrees is warm for this time of year at night. In the wintertime, we'll get 3 or 4 or 5 snowstorms of 2 inches to a foot.
Wow.
And that's about it. Nice sunny days during the winter, not unusual to get up to 40, 50 degrees, and even 60 degrees by late February. But this last winter, we had the coldest winter in 40 years. And it got down to 7 below zero here and 12 to 22 below up and down the valley. So some of the people lost their vines. We were very fortunate. We lost maybe 10% of our vines is all.
Wow.
So it's been a strange year. And then since January 1st, we haven't had over about a half an inch of moisture total.
Wow.
A little bit dry.
A little bit, to say the least, yes. So you irrigate, obviously. What type of irrigation system are you using?
I have everything on drip irrigation with drip. Two different wells.
And you're great. I don't know if everybody hears that or not. I keep flicking onto the Black Mesa Winery website here, and this one page, every time you flip on it, it pours a glass of wine. And
I did that too.
So if anybody can hear that out there, that's what that noise is.
You hear the cork. You hear the cork popping, and on the main page, and on the other pages, you hear the cork popping.
Yeah,
right.
You hear,
pretty good.
At first, I thought Mike was playing around, but
nope.
I realized
Not this time.
So I just want to let you. That's a cool sound, though. I like that. The grapes. You mentioned the ones that you did. Chardonnays, Riesling, Cabernet. These are all. All able to withstand the weathers there, then. You don't get cold enough to really cause any problems.
Right. Well, we're on some pretty good rootstock, and it doesn't stay cold very long. That's the main thing for grapevines. If it were to stay down around zero or whatever for a week or 10 days, it would probably wipe them out. But usually it's a 1 or 2 day phenomena, and even during the day, it's not unusual to get up above freezing. So that's how they survive with it.
So you really don't have enough to really sit there and freeze the base, the roots, or anything like that?
No. My whole irrigation system is buried about 4 to 6 inches. And I water every month of the year, and I don't have any trouble with the with the pipes freezing up or anything like that. It doesn't stay cold long enough to get down to where the main roots are.
Wow. Well, 4 to 6 inches, that's not very deep. So really that you don't get as cold as what I thought there.
No, not where we're at.
Is that because of the microclimate where you're at, or is that basically in New Mexico?
Well, of course, the further north you get, like up to Taos, then they've got the what you would expect. It's frozen down at, a foot to 2 foot during the winter. And Santa Fe, which is also higher than we are, they have to bury their stuff much deeper. But a combination of just being along the river here and the microclimate makes it pretty nice, pretty easy. I grew up in Colorado, and we figured every time it would in the winter it freeze down to 2 foot, so you better be 3 foot deep with your water lines.
Wow.
Not around here. We're pretty fortunate.
So you are, I've got a map up here now. Again, you are where exactly?
We're almost right in the middle between Santa Fe and Taos along the Rio Grande River, Highway 68.
Okay, I found 68 here. So, okay. So you're actually you're pretty far north then.
Yeah, we are.
So Taos is a ski area too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the ski area is quite a bit above the town, but Taos gets a lot of snow, and there it's 7,000 feet or something, and so is Santa Fe. So we dropped down to get to Velarde and Black Mesa Winery.
I see. So actually the mountains around you and I call them mountains, what you all call them hills.
If you're from Colorado, these are hills.
These
from New Mexico or Texas, these are mountains.
Yeah, from Florida, they're mountains. But the mountains around you then basically shield you. They're really giving you a great microclimate where you are.
Yeah, it's very nice up and down the valley here. We have apples and peaches, cherries, apricots, pears, that sort of stuff. Now, most of those do get frosted in the spring, and they'll lose the crop or partial crop every other year. But grapes, this is the first year I've lost any grapes in 11 years.
Wow. Again, you said 11 years. That's how long you've been there? Is that how long the winery's been open, or is that how long you've had planted? Or
the winery started in 1992 by Gary and Connie Anderson. And then my wife and I purchased it in 2000. They said they were retired to begin with, and they said it cut into their retirement traveling. And so we took it over in 2000, and this is our 11th year.
Oh, wow. Wow, 11 years. That's so you've and the wines you make, what we talked about what you grow. Do you make wine from everything that you grow?
Yeah, we do. Plus, I buy a lot of grapes out of southern New Mexico. A friend down there, Paulo de Andrea, has a large vineyard, about 500 acres. So I buy a lot of stuff from him. And along with some other wineries, we truck it up here in a refrigerated truck and produce the wines at our wineries. But we'll do Tempranillo, Pinot Noir, Dolcetto, Sangiovese, then some of the whites, Sauvignon Blanc. What else have I got for whites? Chardonnay. I do some Chardonnay from down south as well as from up north here. There's a difference, as you would expect, in the grapes just because of the terroir. And down south, it's been over 100 degrees every day for a week or two here, and tends to sometimes ripen the grapes a little more quickly than one would possibly like. And up here, they ripen much slower, so you get different flavors, in of course, in the same grapes. And sometimes you put them together, and sometimes you keep them separate, just depending on what you need to make a final wine out of them.
What is your background in? Are you the winemaker to begin with?
Oh, yeah, that and the janitor.
I know the feeling. And the electrician and the plumber and the yard man. I know, that's what I
exactly.
do too, everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I'm the winemaker. My background is not in wine. This is my sixth career. I was tired of all the others and moving around, and we were in California at the time, and decided that this was the direction I wanted to go. So we moved from California to Oregon, and I hung out in the Willamette Valley for about 5 years, mostly on a volunteer basis, on the weekends at a small winery, and learned enough to be dangerous, and here I am.
Uh-huh.
So one of these days I'll go to school, but I just don't have time.
No, you don't have to. I never did either. You can learn enough without going to school. You know, it's more fun. I noticed you have a mini block. Do you you use a mini block for all of your bottling needs then?
Yeah, we do. We've had it for a couple, I think about, we're in our third year with it at this point. Up until then, we shared one on a trailer with four other wineries.
Oh.
And that worked really well. The camaraderie between most of the wineries here in New Mexico is just, it's been one of the fun parts of the whole job. And so four of us went together, five of us went together and bought a bottling line, and then we would just meet in the middle between the wineries and hook it onto the next truck and pull it to your winery and bottle. And that worked pretty well until we kind of, here at Black Mesa, kind of got too big for our britches, and we were kind of hogging the bottling line here. So it was time to, before somebody shot me in the middle of the night, to go ahead and buy our own bottling line and build a building, and it's worked out really well.
Good. I mentioned Mini Block just for the listeners out there. Mini Block is a self-contained bottling contraption, if you will. It you feed the bottles in one end. It cleans them. It flips them around. Fills it full of wine. It adds a little CO2 or not CO2, a little bit of nitrogen on it. It does everything and spits it out the other end for you. So puts a cork in it and spits it out the other end. It's a nice little contraption. Nice little machine, and if you get one working right, it really, really makes your job easier. So
ours, we also have it hooked up to a labeling machine.
Oh, do you? Really? Oh.
So we process 1,100 bottles an hour.
Wow.
That's as hard as we want to work. The machine will do more than that. It's from Italy. It'll do more than that, but we don't want to do more than that. That's takes the fun out of it if you do more than that.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with dumping the bottles into one end and case them at the other when you're doing more than that too. So
yeah, it is. It keeps you hopping.
It does. It does. I've checked into the men in blocks and I've been around them and all that, and they are fascinating. And but they do keep you hopping. There's no question about that. Bud break. When do you get bud break normally down there?
We usually have it in April, from the middle to the end of April.
And then harvest is?
Earliest would be the middle of September. We harvest clear through the middle of October, and then we do kind of a late harvest in November after we've had a couple of good freezes. We do not an ice wine because it's not cold enough here for that, but a late harvest wine where you pick the grapes that are, oh, they're 20-30% decimated by then, and make
wow.
a nice late harvest wine.
What is normal bricks on your grapes when you do pick?
Around here, pretty much we get them where I want them, from 22 on the whites to 25, 26 on the reds.
Wow.
And sometimes the grapes coming from down south will be a little higher than that because it's just hard to stop the ripening. When in August, I've hauled grapes when it was 100 degrees, and it's just hard to stop it sometimes, I think. But I try and control it around here. We have just small acreages, and it's a lot easier to control. And our Pinot Grigio last year, we picked half of it at 19 bricks. Then we let the other half ripen to about 24 and fermented them separately and then blended them back together and came up with a nice Pinot Grigio.
That sounds like it would be. You mentioned acreage. How much total acreage do you have?
I have only have about 3 acres here at the winery, and then I work with a neighbor on another 3 acres, and then after that I buy some all the northern New Mexico grapes I can get my hands on, which is probably a total of maybe 8-9 acres, and then the rest of the grapes I buy from southern New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Last year, I think we bought about 100 tons.
Wow. So no wonder you need a mini block. I can see why you were hogging it.
Yeah. Yeah, it still keeps us busy, but it's a lot nicer to walk out and walk into your own building and throw the switch and know what happened last and what you wanted to do today, and it was inside, not outside. So
no.
it was time.
Yeah, I can understand that. You are not in any of the 3 ABAs where you are you?
No, we're still just New Mexico. We are working on a Northern Rio Grande ABA, though.
Are you? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To me, with the valley there, and I mean all the fruits and stuff that you named that they're growing, it seems like that would be a unique little ABA there. So,
well, and that's what we're working at. And part of the struggle has been right now an ABA needs a minimum of 85 acres of vines. And up until the last couple of years, I don't think we would have made it. But now there's a new grape co-op in the valley started last year. And there's about 20, 25 members, and they all have a half acre or more and are planting more. So I think we're going to be fine here in a couple of years. But we just didn't have the volume needed of acreage for grapes. They planted apples and cherries and alfalfa and that sort of stuff because the government said that would be good. And all it did was take up a lot of water.
Ah, yeah, it will, too. A lot more than you will on grapes, yeah.
For sure.
Always like to ask every winery that, before we go any further, Mike and I had a question at the beginning of the program. And we weren't sure, and we figured we would ask you or anyone from New Mexico. Do you call yourself New Mexicans or what? Is that the proper term?
Yeah, New Mexicans.
New Mexicans is the proper term. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We were curious.
A lot of people think we're not even part of the United States. pretty, pretty funny some days. What people you run into, and people that don't know their geography. They know where Texas is, and they know where Arizona is, and it surprises them that there's another state in between.
Right between the two.
Yeah. It's pretty entertaining, and some days a little bit sad, but...
Yeah. But you're right in the middle there.
Yeah,
I know. That's... That is sad. That's why I, at the beginning of the program, I always tell people where the state is and who borders it and all that stuff. Try to let them know. Always like to ask, how friendly is the Mexican, New Mexican, there I go again, perpetuating the rumor that you don't exist. How friendly is the New Mexican government toward wineries?
They don't know we exist.
Oh, really?
They're surprised. It's really kind of sad. They are starting to get to catch on that we draw a lot of tourists into the state, and they spend their dollars here. And we're a local industry, and we hire local people and everything else. But they're just they don't mind taxing us a little bit, but we don't get any support. Especially not like what Texas is doing for its people, and Oklahoma's going crazy and how their government supporting vineyards as well as wineries, but not New Mexico.
Well, you'll have, what, 46 wineries, though, don't you? Something like that?
Yeah, oh, sure. Most of them are pretty small, but we've got that many. I think we're the third largest. We're about 8, 9, 10,000 cases, something like that.
Wow. Well,
most of them are pretty small, but still, they're growing their own grapes or buying local grapes. And of course, like all the other states, we pay excise tax and sales tax and income tax and employment tax. But the state just hasn't caught on that we're a good investment in the state, even the state tourism dollar.
How about shipping regulations then?
Well, we finally got our New Mexico finally passed their shipping regulation this last session in March. Up until then, it was kind of a free for all, but now they've got it, and starting July 1st, people can get a permit to ship here. I think it's $100 a year, and I don't think they're charging taxes. I think you just have to get a permit.
Oh, wow.
So that's,
and you
that's
you can ship big. Out?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. We ship to about 40 different states from here.
Oh.
We have a wine club of close to 600 members, and
oh,
they're scattered
wow.
across the country.
So, Mike, do you have any questions?
Let me see. I might have missed this one early on, but what is the size of your vineyard? Like acreage?
Yeah, we've got, like I said, 3 acres here on the property.
Okay.
And then down the river about a half a mile, I work with another guy for another 3 acres. And the rest of the vine, or the rest of the grapes we buy from neighbors and then down south in Deming.
And do you use oak or steel barrels?
We use a combination of used French plus new American oak. And then stainless steel for all our whites. And this year we did our Chardonnay in a stainless steel and found it quite attractive.
That's when I make an unoaked Chardonnay. That's what I put together also. So.
Yeah. We didn't put it through malolactic, and we didn't put it in oak. So it's very crisp, very Chardonnay-like.
Yeah,
maybe a little French Chardonnay type taste on it. So
people
like it, and some don't.
A lot of people are looking for it. They're getting over oaked, and so it's a nice thing to have available.
I tell people I want them to taste my wine, not the tree.
Yes, exactly. It sounds like me too. I don't want to drink a Chardonnay and like I'm chewing on a tree branch. So
exactly. Yep.
You know.
So I want to know if Florida really has the oldest grapevines and the oldest wine industry, or if New Mexico does.
Actually, Florida does. I read a lot of the websites here about New Mexico, and New Mexico started in, I want to say, 1630 or something, I think is what I saw. 1629. Florida had the French come over and open up a winery on the East Coast where Fort Lauderdale is in that area in 1563.
Wow.
So, and they had a winery for about 10, 12 years there. The French Huguenots, the French Christians came over and did it. And for about 10, 12 years there, they had a winery, and they closed it down. So, actually, Florida does take it by about 50 years.
Yeah, sounds like it. I think we, commercially, that's accurate. I know that the priests and stuff brought vines into the valley here in 1596, but they grew it all for sacred wine, they said. And so it wasn't until the date you said that we actually got a commercial winery.
Right.
They brought it over so they could have communion wine, and it's called a mission grape, and there's still some of the descendants in the valley here, and there's still one or two wineries that make wine out of mission grapes.
Mm.
Doesn't make a great wine, but it's not one of the native ones that are around here.
Yeah, the actually they had to sneak it out of France. France wouldn't let any. I'm sorry, they had to sneak it out of Spain and France because neither one of those countries wanted to let any grapes go because they were afraid that it was going to lose their sales in this part of the world. And so they didn't want the grapes to be growing over here because they thought that it would compromise their sales.
Right, right. Yeah, same in New Mexico. The priests had to sneak it in because it was against the church's rules and the Spain's rules at the time to export vines.
Yeah, so that's what happened. So, well, Mike, any other questions?
Are there any wine trails there?
Oh. We're putting that together. There's a meeting on Monday to finalize that. There'll be four wine trails in the state.
Wow.
And so we're pretty excited about that. We had to write for different grant monies to make it happen, again, because the state didn't want to support it. And finally, they're finally saying, oh, well, maybe this will work. So, pretty crazy. It's New Mexico, land of enchantment. And somebody said it's a privilege to live here and you're going to pay for it.
Okay.
Well, Jerry, thank you very much. But I'm going to let you tell us all the contact information, everything for Black Mesa Winery. Give us your email. Give us your phone number. Give us your address. Everything so that the listeners out there, if and when they would like to contact you or get anything, they can do so. So fill us in.
Okay. It's Black Mesa Winery. The website is blackmesawinery.com. Phone number is 505-852-2820. Our tasting rooms open every day except Christmas till 6 o'clock, and if you give us 24 hours notice, we'll even give you tours of the winery and the production and that sort of thing. So,
and
my name's Jerry Bird, and they'll track me down. My home is on the property, and the staff, though they try and protect me, they'll eventually track me down if you need to talk to me.
Well, fantastic. Jerry, I appreciate you joining us tonight. That was fantastic. Great information. And Jerry and I talked before we got on the air a little bit earlier this afternoon, and we were talking about he has a Facebook page.
You go to Facebook, and I think you just ask for Black Mesa Winery and go ahead and become a friend or a buddy or whatever you do.
Or a like or whatever they do now.
Yeah, a like. And my wife updates it once or twice a day. So we're that. And I think she also does a little bit of the Twitter stuff, but mostly on the Facebook.
Oh, fantastic. It's good to hear. So everyone out there can become a fan of Black Mesa Winery down there in northern New Mexico, north central New Mexico.
Yep, we're north.
Jerry, thank you very much. Best of luck to you. And if I'm ever down in that area, I will definitely stop in and meet you in person.
Okay, really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank
definitely.
You.
Thank you, Jerry.
You bet. Bye.
Bye now.
Okay. And we have our next guest ready to go. Anytime you are ready.
Is he? Jim. Yeah, I see him on the thing here. Yeah, I just pulled up my
my screen.
My screen. Yeah.
I was
looking
at
other stuff. Yeah.
The Black Mesa Winery photo. I just love this photo. I don't know. It's just the way it looks. The snow covered barrel with the mesa behind the winery. It's amazing. I'm like, oh my God, that's a perfect shot.
Yeah, that is very nice.
Whoever took that, I love that photo. Okay, so
and just
are you ready to bring
snow? Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's not too much, but what did he say last year? Or it's common to get up to a foot of snow. That's amazing.
Right.
That's,
I know.
Just still enough.
That surprised me too. So, all right. Now we have ourselves our next speaker tonight. Our next guest is. Jerry, I'm trying to pull up the thing here. Jim from what is Anasazi Winery?
Anasazi Fields
right?
Winery.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Jim Fish with Anasazi Fields Winery in the old historic village of Placitas, New Mexico.
And where is Placitas?
It is on the north side of the Sandia Mountains, north of Albuquerque, east of I-25 on the way to Santa Fe. We're about 6 miles off the interstate in a little spring-fed valley on the north side of the Sandia Mountains.
So between Albuquerque and Santa Fe?
Correct.
Off of I-25. Okay, there you are, right in that area there. A lot of wineries in northern New Mexico, I noticed.
Yes, we have quite a booming industry going on. So, and there's several more little ones in the works. So, yeah, we have over 40 wineries already in the state and a few more in the works.
Wow, that's wonderful. That really is. So, tell us about Anasazi Fields Winery.
We started off doing fruit wines other than grapes, using the local fruits that are grown here in this little valley. We have some beautiful apricots, wild cherries, peaches, plums, apples, nectarines. And that fruit was essentially going to waste because it didn't happen every year. But when we did get a lot of fruit, we would get a lot of fruit. And so I started making wine out of that fruit. And I like dry, big, heavy red wines, and so I started making fruit wines with that kind of a style, not knowing any better, and the hobby got out of control, and now that's what we do.
So it was just for fun, and then it turned into a life choice.
Totally,
there,
totally just took over. So I had to quit my day job as a chemical engineer and become a full-time vintner.
So any other background in it except just home hobbyist?
Just a home hobbyist. I've loved wine for years. I love wine with food, and so that's the style of wine we started making with these other fruits. So, for example, an apricot wine that is bone dry, oak-aged, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10 years old.
Wow.
Nice, rich, great with salmon or shrimp or crab or Alfredo sauce. Just a real complex white style wine, but made from 100% apricot.
Huh.
And then a few years later, we started blending these old fruit wines with nice grape wines to kind of increase the complexity, turn up the gain on the grape wines. We do a Blanco Seco that's a Chardonnay apricot blend, 17% apricot in a wonderful New Mexico Chardonnay, and I call it my red wine drinker's white wine.
Uh-huh.
What, and then the other...
Just to see, where do you get your Chardonnay?
It comes from southern New Mexico.
Okay.
In the Deming-Lordsburg area. They grow uh-huh. some very nice Chardonnay down there.
Wow. Go ahead with your wines. Tell us about the rest of them here.
Another wine we make is 100% wild cherry wine. There's a native cherry here called Prunus emarginated. It's a little black cherry with a real high level of cinnamic acid in the pits and skins. We do a whole fruit fermentation, make a heavy red, dry red wine out of those wild cherries. And it's kind of our claim to fame. There's no other commercial winery in the world that I know of that's making that wine. And then we take some of that wine and blend it with a real nice Syrah to make a wine we call Rojo Seco. That's just about 8% wild cherry, but it's got just this beautiful aroma and a nice finish. The other thing that is really unique about our wines, because we do a whole fruit fermentation, we get all of those complex organic acids from the pits and the skins, the natural preservatives and the natural antioxidants.
Uh-huh.
So we don't have to add sulfites to our wines. They're inherently stable, and they age for years.
With no added sulfites?
I opened a 98 wild... What's that?
No added
sulfites?
We
do not have... No added sulfites, because
wow.
they're inherently stable antioxidants we get from the long contact with the skins and the... And so they're quite nice. And they age for years.
That sounds... What happens when you're already getting all this complexity from it, you're saying? All this, these rich undertones and everything. So what happens to it when you age it? Say your cranberry, your apricot, your cherry, you start aging those for years?
When they first come out of the primary fermenters, they're more like the big, heavy red grape wines. They're a little bit harsh. Over time, and we have very high levels of acids in our wine, so over time those acids react with the oak that we're aging them with, or they react with one another. The more reactive acids combine with one another, combine with the oak, so those active sites that kind of bite disappear, and the wines get more viscous, more smooth, better mouthfeel. They just get creamier and better, and more fruit comes forward.
Wow.
So they're very unique, especially for fruit wines. Most fruit wines are bordering on pancake syrup. These are more like big, hip, old-style red wines.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's interesting. An interesting concept. I do a couple of fruit wines, but I keep them very light, very, very soft, very light fruit wine. I do an orange and a key lime down here in Florida, and I don't put the effort at all into what you're doing with yours. I'll be the first to admit. I just, it's a blend between white grapes and oranges, and a blend between white grapes and key limes, and just a nice soft light wine. But seems to me like you're putting a lot of time into these to bring out things in it that you wouldn't normally find.
Right. Yes, they are definitely unique for the fruit wine business. And the apricot Chardonnay blend is more like what you're talking about, just a light hint of that apricot in a Chardonnay. Then we have the pure apricot, which is the one we're currently serving is a 2000, so it's 11 years old, and it's
wow.
more like a rich, dry sherry, but it's just pure apricot, and it's just this essence of apricot comes out of it, both in the nose and the finish.
That sounds fantastic. I noticed on your website the 96 Plum, the final release of Plum, or the final
yeah.
release of the 96?
The final release of the 96. Back in 96, this was the year after we started the commercial operation, and I needed a big batch of wine, and we didn't have any fruit in the village that year because of the winter. And so I bought a truckload of plums from California and made 1,200 gallons of this plum wine. And last summer, we found the 75-gallon tank of that still on oak down in the cellar and tasted it and decided to bottle it. And that's our final release, and it's just about gone.
Uh-huh.
But it's 100% plum. It was on oak for 14 years, and it's just smooth, creamy, and wonderful.
It sounds phenomenal. I mean, it really does. I was impressed just with the description here. The cranberry, what is that?
That started totally as a lark one winter after the holiday season. The local fruit wholesaler called me and said he had a bunch of excess cranberries, and so I said, okay, send them out. And I opened those little plastic bags and dumped them in the fermenter and made a batch of cranberry wine. A couple of years later, I released it, and it's just been crazy. We're now making 1,200 gallons a year of that wine.
Wow.
And I work with Ocean Spray, get bulk cranberries directly from Ocean Spray. And I order the product after the first of the year when the prices come down a little bit, and it's just been a real successful wine for us. And then last year we started doing a Chenin Blanc cranberry blend for the summer. And it's 23% cranberry wine in a New Mexico Chenin Blanc, so we can label it New Mexico. We call it New Mexico Guajolote, which means wild turkey.
Uh-huh.
Cranberry wine, wild turkey. Goes great.
Well,
we're having
funny.
A lot of fun.
It definitely sounds like it. So you all of your fruit then comes right from the valley there, from your valley.
Well, everything that's our top priority is use the local fruit. We also buy fruit from other places in New Mexico, for example, the grape. And then the cranberry comes from Ocean Spray.
Right.
But currently the cranberry is the only fruit that we're bringing in from outside of New Mexico.
So you really don't grow anything yourself then? Is that correct?
Oh, no. We raise apricots, peaches, cherries, plums. We have a big orchard here in the old village of Placidas.
Oh,
and so
okay.
We raise all the fruit other than the cranberry right here in the village, and we're raising some red grapes. We make one red grape wine that we call Synesthesia. That's a blend of the three grapes we grow here in the village, Syrah, Black Malvasia, and Gamay.
Uh-huh.
Black Malvasia being one of the Chianti grapes.
Right.
But we do a field blend of those three grapes, make a huge red wine that we call Synesthesia. And that's the only grape that we grow, the only grape wine from our own grapes. And then all the apricots, all the peaches, plums, cherries come from our own orchard.
Well, we just talked to Jerry from Black Mesa Winery, and he's north of you in another little valley. Does your valley protect this fruit and everything? I mean, surely you're going to be getting some really cold weather, and you're going to be getting some late frost in the spring and all that. Does your valley protect that?
What happens is about every third year we get a huge fruit crop. Every year we get something. This year the only fruit we got were the wild cherries. They're a native plant, so they're adapted to this climate.
Right.
When we get apricots, we get lots of apricots. So we'll make 1,500 gallons of apricot wine, and then that will tide us over. And we have 99 apricot wines still in our cellar that we haven't bottled. So we have a big supply of old wine that we've made from fruit when we have these huge production years. And so we just kind of, whatever is available, that's what we make wine out of that year. So 1 year we may make a huge batch of apricot. The next year we don't.
Another year
we'll have peaches. So it's just, you know, it's a way to disconnect the product from the winter, because we age our wines several years, and so we've always got a back supply of old wine that we can bring out. And it's just a great way to preserve the fruit. So we have sunshine in a bottle in the middle of winter.
It sounds fascinating. Absolutely. Who came up with these names? Is these you, Obscuro Seco, Rojo Seco? These your...
I have to admit that is me.
Yeah.
Obscuro Seco means we started out with the Rojo Seco, dry red. Then we made the Chardonnay apricot blend, so I said the dry white, Blanco Seco. And then I did a Merlot blackberry blend, and I needed another name for it. Well, that's dark dry, so that's where those names come from.
Okay.
It is basically
wondering.
The Spanish descriptions of the wine.
The government in New Mexico, do you battle with them, or do they that you have any problems with them?
Not at all. Not
really?
The states control the selling of wine. The feds control the production, labeling, and all of that stuff. The feds don't know what to do with me because I'm doing wine that is. So they just call it other than ordinary wine, and we go along fine. I can't vintage label anything. I have to basically put very little information on the labels.
Uh-huh.
So that's why we, on the website, we try to provide more information and some of the history of the wine and that kind of thing, because we're not allowed to put it on the label.
Hmm. I see. So you do have to get a label approval, though, through COLA, then.
Absolutely. And it's always an adventure.
I know. It's an adventure to deal with COLA anyway, but something that you're doing,
imagine. Yeah. You know, they've never heard of anybody doing some of the stuff I'm doing, so it can't be illegal. So.
Yeah, I can imagine. But
so sometimes there's many emails go back and forth before I finally get that approval.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah. Well, they're tough anyway, so, you know. You have a wine club, I see.
Yes, we do. Yeah, and it's, again, everything we do is a little different, and our wine club is also a little different. In fact, I had some wine club members come out today that I hadn't seen in 2 years, and they came out and bought two cases of wine, and everything was good. But, yeah, the way we work our wine club, we do not mail automatically. We just let people come out when they want to come out, and we assume they're going to buy at least a case a year on average, and we give them the case discount on the wine up front if they buy two bottles or three bottles or whatever when they come out. And then we invite them to special events, and at the festivals we have a club line so they don't have to stand in line with the masses at the festivals. And,
that's cool.
And
Jim, give me just a second here. We are going off the air live, but we still will be on, still be recording, still be on archive. So I just want to tell everyone out there that is listening to us live, we will be leaving you probably within the next minute or so. So if you want to hear the rest of this, we're not going to leave Jim here right away. If you want to hear the rest of his comments on Anzizia Fields Winery or New Mexico or himself, then tune in on the archives. He'll be available there. We'll have this up, how long, Mike, does it take? A minute?
Oh, yeah, afterwards? It's just... Yeah, and then it's on iTunes also within a few minutes. So,
you can tune in on us there. Festival at the Winery this weekend. Come on out if you're local and listening. And thank you all for tuning in today. And don't run away. Listen to us on archives. You can hear the end of it. So thank you, Jim, for the patience on that. Now,
you bet.
You mentioned you have a wine festival. Is that periodically or monthly or?
Well, we participate in the big New Mexico wine festivals. We just finished one last weekend at Ranchos de las Colendrinas up by Santa Fe. There were 17 wineries there, 17 New Mexico wineries. Memorial Day weekend, there's a festival in Albuquerque, as well as one in Las Cruces. We participate in the one in Albuquerque. Labor Day weekend, there's one in Bernalillo, which is just down the road from us. It's the New Mexico Wine Festival at Bernalillo, the oldest festival in the state, and there'll be 20-something wineries at that festival.
Wow.
And then we do a number of events at the winery, and those are all listed on our website, including arts and crafts, music, poetry readings. So we do, you know, a number of things at the winery as well.
The poetry series.
We don't have a. Yes, the Duende Poetry Series is. This will be our. We're in our sixth year of that. There's a big poet, artisan community, musician community here in the area, and so we try to support that, giving a venue for those kind of events. I'm a poet myself, and so that was one of the interests that I had in the poetry series. I also do some wood carving, so I participate with the artists, so we just have a nice little symbiotic community here with art, music, wine, poetry. It just all goes together nicely.
It sounds like that poetry series is an interesting concept, though. With the winery that we have down here, I'm always looking at something that might work, and maybe something like that might be another little niche that we can do. So that might be fun too.
It's very compatible with wine. I mean, we've had poets come in from all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
We just had a poet from who's currently living in Mexico. It was just up here in our June reading.
That sounds interesting.
We do anything we can to get people to come out here and enjoy this beautiful landscape that we have in Placidas. Go ahead.
I just want to say your fish bits. Is that just wonderings of you? Or
yes.
Every time you feel like writing a little bit, you just throw something in there?
Yes, sir.
I was looking at that on your website here, and it seemed like it was just that.
Yeah, we have a lot of layers buried in that website, so if people go onto the website, then they can have some fun as they wander around into the deeper layers of the website. And we're going to be doing a lot more of that, and we're just gearing up to get on Facebook and start doing regular postings on that.
Well, All About Wine ETR is our Facebook page, so we're going to start popping wineries as our friends on that. So let us know.
Great.
Go to All About Wine BTR for Blog Talk Radio and friend us, and we'll friend you up on there so people can have a link to you that way too. So when you get your site up, your Facebook site up there.
Yeah, we should have that going in about a month.
Good.
I have
good.
A couple people working on it right now.
We'll look forward to that. Mike, you have anything you want to?
Well, are you participating any in the wine trails? We just talked to when we talked to Jerry. He said they were putting together some wine trails. Do you have any input on that, or are you?
I plan to go to that meeting on Monday, and definitely. And we have been doing a wine passport program, which has really been successful.
You're part of that?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And that's been a great program for us because we are just a little bit off the freeway. It's really helped get people to make that effort to come on off the freeway and come see us. And then once they get here, we can dazzle them with what we have, and it's worked out pretty well for us.
Oh, yeah. That's Interstate 25, I see. Yeah.
Yes.
It looks, yeah, it looks like you're a little over 6 miles or so from there. That's definitely really good. Hmm. Okay. No, that was it. That's what I was getting at. So.
Okay.
Very cool.
I think you pretty much told us all about the information, everything that we want to know about the winery. Before we let you go, though, give us all the information about Anza. And let me ask one more question. How did you come up with the name of the winery?
Anasazi Fields Winery, the name comes from the pre-Pueblo Native Americans, the Anasazi culture, the Four Corners, Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde, that culture. This was an outlier area for that culture, and it was a cornfield fed by an irrigation system that was put in over 1,000 years ago.
Wow.
And so this was an Anasazi cornfield, and our logo is a corn stalk, which is a reproduction of a petroglyph that is on a ridge right above the winery, looking down on the winery. And so that's
cool.
We use that corn stalk as our logo, and we call it Anasazi Fields. We found all kinds of pot shards and grindstones. There's even a little archaeological site on our property, and I had a friend who's a professional archaeologist did a little test dig there and conclusively proved that that irrigation ditch is over 1,000 years old.
Wow.
And we're using the same ditch now to water our trees and our grapevines.
That's cool.
Wow.
Are you a native New Mexican?
I originally come from Texas. I've been in New Mexico since 81.
Okay, yeah. I just everybody's from somewhere, it seems, so, you know. Tell
but
us
I
all
grew
about
up in
Anasazi
South.
Fields, contact information, how to get a hold of you, your email of, well, you don't have Facebook yet, but you will, phone numbers, addresses, everything that people out there can, if they want to and need to and desire to get some of your wines, they can.
Okay, yeah, the physical address is 26 Camino de los Pueblitos in the village of Placitas, 87043. The mailing address is P.O. Box 712. Phone number 505-867-3062. Email Anasazi Fields Winery at att.net. And that is going to be changing soon to information at AnasaziFieldsWinery.com, which is our website.
Oh.
And so we're making this conversion as we go to Facebooks. Everything will feed into their website, AnasaziFieldsWinery.com.
Very cool.
I think that pretty well covers that information.
Fantastic. Jim, thank you very, very much for your information. Do you ship to Florida?
We do ship to Florida. We use an outfit out in California called vinoshipper.com.
Mm-hmm.
They are a wonderful service for us small wineries. And Florida is one of the states for which they have a permit, so we can ship to Florida.
Fantastic.
If you go to our website, on the wine page, there's a link to vinoshipper.com. All of our wines are not listed on their site, but if you email me first, and I can fix you up with what to order so that we get the package right.
Fantastic, because my wife was in the background listening to you, and she kept saying, ooh, that sounds good. Ooh, that sounds good. Ooh, that sounds good.
The only warning is they're not sweet.
Yeah, which is good, which is really good. We're looking, you know, we're going to have to get something and look forward to that.
Okay, very good, sir.
Jim, thank you very, very much. We appreciate you being on the program with us tonight. This is on archive, so if you you want to get it and download it or something, you can always, you know, get in touch with Mike. He's the tech man. He can tell you how to put this on your website also if you want to, this segment of the program and all that. And
thank you very much for sharing
your information with us tonight.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
You're welcome. Night. Fine.
Okay. Wow, that was a longer clap than usual. Yeah, very interesting. That's and we have more guests coming up next week from New Mexico. So this is it's a lot more wine there than I thought we would have. I mean,
New Mexico, and I've got a lot of information I'm going to pass on about New Mexico, too. I mean, we've got three speakers next week, and I haven't talked anything about the AVAs. There's three AVAs there. There's, you know, a very long history of wine in New Mexico. Jim just asked her, does Florida or New Mexico the first? Well, Florida actually beats them by about 50 years, but New Mexico's got a great history of wine and wine making down there. I mean, from the Mexicans and the priests and stuff like that. It's fascinating.
Which is kind of how Florida got theirs, I guess. Was it French or?
It was the French that came over here in Florida. The French, Christians, French Huguenots came over and.
I keep thinking Spain up in St. Augustine, but that must have been. I don't remember if that was. No, that was before then, wasn't it?
That was before then, yeah.
Sorry. Not a native Floridian, but I should know the history by now. Three AVAs, but the northern, if they get this other one going, the northern Rio Grande Valley AVA, that would make it four total, right?
Four AVAs in the state of New Mexico.
Yeah,
I mean,
if they get that going, that'll be, wow.
And they're all basically within the state of New Mexico. The one AVA, the Mesilla Valley, is a little bit of Texas, but mostly all New Mexico also. So it's, I was surprised. I have to say, I was really surprised about what I've discovered about New Mexican wineries. I did not expect this much.
I don't know if it's location, climate, or what, but and then it surprises you like that, and we turn a one-day show into, maybe it has to go, it's definitely going to go to a part two next week. Who knows where it's going to go from there? I mean,
And there's a lot of information about that these speakers aren't even talking about New Mexico. It's just the passport thing, too. Jim just mentioned that lightly here. The New Mexico Wine Grower Association sponsors that. There is quite a group. Most of the wineries belong to this in New Mexico Wine Growers Association. Most people are members of it. But what you do is you sign up, you register for it, you activate it under My Passport page. There you can keep track of your passport codes. Every winery you go to, you get a code, so you can log it into your page on the computer. You can view your progress towards your rewards. You can update contact information for yourself and others. You submit your new passports on there. Then as you visit wineries in New Mexico and spend at least $5 on anything, you spend at least $5, they will stamp your passport, and then you go back and you log that onto your code. And then once you find there's a passport stamp number on your stamp, you log that in, and then as you get stamps, you can start getting engraved corkscrews, custom wine glasses, wine picnic sets, and then there's a winner at the end of the year that gets an all-expense-paid wine cruise for two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool deal, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And the whole state works on it, and it, under the New Mexico Wine Growers Association, and it's really a pretty cool thing, and it gets people around to the wineries, and it gets them, spending a little bit of money, and it gives them a reason. I think, and who was it we just talked to that did New Jersey, was it, or some? I think New Jersey.
That would have been week before. Week before last? Yeah, last week was HR. Oh, on the 16th we did, let me see, I don't see anything on. You mean as far as?
I think New Jersey does a passport too. Because the lady won a trip, to France or something. But you know, this is a great idea. I mean, I just love this idea. It gets people out. It gets people to the wineries. It gives them, not only do they visit the wineries, but it also gives them incentive to go to all the wineries, not just you know, the one down the street, but to check out everybody and all that. And as a person in a winery, I think this is just a fantastic way to do it. I really do.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just trying to look back here. I didn't see anything on that in any of the. I know we talked to somebody with the. I thought there was a couple of states with passports. It was one early on, and then one not too long ago that we had. We can't see it on there.
Look at my notes. Yeah, it was New Jersey. I got all my notes here. New Jersey passport system. Yeah.
Oh, good. I didn't see that written down. I got a page and a half on here, but everything but. Okay. Anyway. Very interesting, and we'll have that again next Thursday at 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio on All About Wine. And we are 43 minutes left of this 2-hour show.
Or 2-hour show, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's 8:16 now, and I do have the ad for the Wine Fest, if we can go ahead and get that on the archive roll and let that get recorded into it. So people know to come out. This Saturday is Wine Fest. And 11 to 4, are we ready? Can we go ahead and roll this one, I guess?
We can go ahead and roll it. We'll say goodbye when we get back.
Yeah, we'll be back in 1 minute and then 15 seconds.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
That's right.
There we are. We got a special. We're going to run a special. I'll tell you what we're going to do. For people listening to Blog Talk Radio, anybody who comes in and says that they heard this on Blog Talk Radio, we will give them 20% off any wine purchase.
Oh, my goodness.
So that way, you know, gives us an opportunity for people who listen to Blog Talk Radio to stop by the winery and also lets us know you're listening. But 20% discount for any wine purchase. Just mention that you heard it on Blog Talk Radio. And this is the only place we're doing this. So. You know, it's don't look for it anywhere. You have to have heard it here, or else it's not going to happen. So,
I was going to grab my keys, but I think y'all are closed right now.
Yes. And this disclaimer: current employees or people who are associated with Florida State Winery or Blog Talk Radio are not allowed to take the 20% discount. That means you, Mike.
I just did a rim shot. Okay.
We always take care of you, Mike. You need to come out.
Right.
There you go.
Florida State. Well, thank you. Florida State's winery is located at 25241 State Road 52. 25241 State Road 52. Punch that up in your GPS. I'll wait. Okay. Land O'Lakes, Florida, 34639. Call direct to the winery at 813-996-2113. That's the number to call Florida Estates Winery, or visit them on the website, a very nice website at www.floridaestateswines.com. Floridaestateswines.com. You can also email All About Wine, the show. That goes to Ron as well, at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com.
Or visit us on our All About Wine website, our That's All right. About Wine
Facebook page.
Facebook page.
Yeah. And All Florida About. States Wineries. Yeah, Florida States Wineries on Facebook as well. So
That's
All
right.
About
Either one. So.
I think we need 25 people to like us on Facebook, and then we can get one of those custom, you know, things to make it easy for people to find us. So the show.
Oh, really? That's what it takes, 25.
Yes, I was reading that.
We have 7 so far. So people click on us, like us.
Yes, like us. Do a search for All About Wine BTR for Blog Talk Radio. All About Wine BTR. Like us, and if we get 25, then we can make it simple. Make it facebook.com/ whatever pages, I think, and then All About Wine or whatever we can get. So.
Well, good. I didn't know that. So.
Yeah. Aren't you? You have quite a few on Florida States Winery on Facebook, right? Do you have a custom?
We have one just that says Florida States Winery. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah, we've got 386 that are followers on that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that is. We were all excited when we hit 100. Now we're up to 386. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Do another special on there. You know, it's our 500th like on Florida States Winery. There you go.
There you go. There's an idea. That
all kinds of things going on. A new car. So what else? We have okay. Next Thursday, 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us live. We'd love to have you, and we'd love to hear your calls. At area code 646-727-323. Oh, God, I don't know why I'm saying that now because they're going to try and call it now. Do not call it now. Call us next week after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and I would love to have you on the program as well. And we'll have at least two guests. I don't know if we can – we'll try and fit three on there.
And while during the program tonight, I got another email from another person. So we can get four people on next week. I don't know if we're going to have time to do four. We may have to go a third week with New Mexico.
Unless we're all talking, you know, well, I don't know how that's going to work.
We'll have to
strategize that one.
Yeah, but we do have three scheduled for next week, and we probably get this fourth on here. She emailed me during the program, so.
That's great. I'm starting to like New Mexico.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's
very enthusiastic about getting on the program. That's really cool. I like that. Okay, we'll see you all. Thank you all for listening to, especially on the archives, and and listening to those of you who stayed with us, you know, on the archives. Thank you, and we will see you all next Thursday. So join
next
us
Thursday.
Then on
New Mexico
All About,
Part 2.
Yeah, All About Wine, and who knows, may have a Part 3 if we have to.
Maybe.
Yeah, have a good rest of the week, and we'll see you all then. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Mike. Thank everyone out there.
All right.